The amount of success sometimes just kind of warp people out a bit because you could be obnoxious.
And I want you to tell me if I ever am.
Your life, the protection even that the Lord has had in your life, I mean, you could have turned out a little screwed up.
And in some ways, I'm sure I am.
You're the most real, kind person, and it's so evident that the Lord, that's the Lord on you.
I just want to use the gifts that I have been given to point others on any corner of the planet to the one who loves them. Jesus was that for me at 5 in my room, and he is that for every one of us.
I mean, Callie and I just finished doing vocals for this song that she and I wrote called Gilead.
Oh my gosh.
And it's just gutting.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just about, and it's really the question, is there a balm in Gilead?
Wow.
You know, can it heal every wound I've ever had? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just this, like, this deep guttural cry.
Yes.
And I think that's where I've been. You know?
Yeah. Well, so, and I think, I mean, we've talked about this before. I like sent you a long voice text about it, but it's just putting voice and beautiful melody and lyric to what we all wrestle with in our own walks with the Lord. And it's like that it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to tell him that we are feeling angry and we're feeling, I mean, I just think it's really, I used this phrase with you. It's like these songs, I know for me, if I'm a field, they're aerating the ground of the field that I am to allow space for the Holy Spirit to just deposit just his presence and his truth, like, and not with these pretty tie it up in a bow responses. It's
right.
Like, we are journeying towards heaven and it will not be easy.
Absolutely.
And it's okay, you know, to declare in the desert, like who you are and choose to trust that that's what's true. Because of the other times he's proven himself over and over faithful.
Yeah.
But
isn't it interesting too? I think about this as a Christian, as somebody who just loves the Lord, that we really do. Like we've got this Savior that we believe in that can do anything. And yet sometimes the last thing that we are is honest.
Yes.
And it really kind of fascinates my brain that is surprising for people. Oh, I just love how you're so honest. It's like, I mean, I said yes to a really honest God. Like a gutturally honest, like he called one of his disciples Satan. He was so honest, you know?
Right.
And it's kind of surprising to me that honesty in our faith is almost taken with a grain of salt. It's like, oh, I don't know if you can be honest with the Lord. You know, but being religious is okay. You know, kind of bucking up into this season of, no, I'm just gonna be as honest. And that's what I think I've done is I'm just like, I am not backing down from honesty.
Yes.
I even was doing a post today and I just was like, look, I'm gonna be honest. I didn't want it to be this date.
Yes.
I want it to be a different date.
Yes.
You know, and I struggle with that. And I struggle with this and I struggle with that. But the beauty of it is, we've had these conversations too. It's like, the beauty of it is, it makes you more trustworthy when,
oh my gosh,
when you're honest.
Yes.
It's like, all of a sudden, you're like, people are like, oh, I can trust that. It's like, why aren't we more honest? Like, why aren't we just more honest?
It builds intimacy. It builds trust.
Yeah.
I mean, it's man, there have been so many times in my walk with the Lord where I just have this moment of like, why am I putting this facade on to you? Like, you created me. You knit me in my mother's womb. Like, why am I trying to pull one over on you? Like, the way that I've put it lately is like, man, there have been seasons where I've gotten so convicted because I've been putting human clothes on him when he is not.
Yeah.
You know, and just remembering his character and the things that are true about him and how powerful and almighty and all those things. And it's like, okay, you know me. Why am I going to try to put a facade on?
Yeah,
you know?
And pretend I'm somebody that you actually know I'm not.
Right, right.
Yeah, it is. I trying to just wrap my brain around the beauty of God's intentions and that he's not wanting me to fake it.
Right.
Like, he's never asked us to fake anything. No. He's just, he wants relationship and wants us to choose him.
Yes. Hey, everybody, this is Rita Springer. If you have been blessed and encouraged with what I have been doing here on the Worship Is My Weapon podcast, and you want to help support us, you can do that through my nonprofit, Wearing Justice. The link is provided here. Any support is greatly appreciated, and it really helps us grow just the encouragement of what we want to do to see creatives press into the presence of the Lord, and just people encouraged by freedom and encouraged by all of what God offers us in relationship with Him. And if that's you and you want to support the ministry, click the link below. I would greatly appreciate that.
I mean, I've known of you, about you. I've listened to your voice specifically too on Lady A, because you really do have a very unique voice. I think a little bit of a voice snob, especially a female voice snob. I mean, I have such a unique voice. And so I think I'm drawn to voices that don't just sound like everybody else. Mm-hmm. And the only other person in Christian music that I've thought, golly, her voice is just like a pure river, is Nicole Binion. I don't know if you know who Nicole Binion is, but she's got this beautiful voice, and so does her young daughter. But you were the only thing I compared that to, because I always knew if I was listening to the radio and Lady A came on, I always knew it was your voice, even though we didn't know each other until recently. Yeah. And the way that we met was kind of interesting.
Yes.
I'm also, Hillary, not the kind of person that keeps up on people.
Yes.
Like, usually I'm going to write, and I don't look the person up before I'm writing. And something said in the write, I usually am like, oh, I guess this guy's a big deal.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yes. And I'm like, yikes, I should have looked that guy up before. But I almost like just staying dumb, because I'm only kind of enamored with the Lord in a sense. And I just don't have that thing on me like some people have on them. So I knew who you were, but I don't know that we'd ever been in the same room.
No.
And it was your sister that the Lord put on my heart. And I was trying to even remember way back, like, I think I saw her Instagram, and then I had talked to Brooke, maybe Lidgetwood, about her. She was in the choir.
Yes.
And somebody said, well, that's Riley. And I'm like, oh, I had a word for Riley. And I had felt like the Lord had burdened me to pray for your sister, your little sister. And I just didn't know how to get a hold of her. And then, you know, I get busy, and then it wasn't like it was this pressing word. I knew it was a word that maybe was a word that would just, the Lord would keep generating prayer for us. So sometimes I'm like, I'll just keep praying for her. Like, I'll just keep praying for her. And then we were in the back of the Ryman.
Yes.
And Lisa Harper
introduced us. Yep.
And I didn't even recognize you, because you're just, you don't come in, you know, decked out in sequins and
rhinestones.
And rhinestones.
I am wearing cowboy boots today.
You are.
Which is rare. But,
and it was just so, it was kind of such a, like, I didn't even recognize you when I was introduced to you. And then when it clicked and Lisa was saying who you were, I was like, I think I said, oh, I've got a word for your sister.
Yes. You said, I've got a word for your sister. I've been praying for her for over a year.
Yeah.
And I, oh my gosh, from that moment, I was like, I am, first of all, there's nothing that touches my heart, and I can speak for my mom and dad too.
Yeah.
They've verbalized this. Like, when you meet someone and you see the hand of God, how out of all of the 8 billion people in the world, and he brought her to you through Instagram, you know, or however. And it's like that someone who knows of our family, but doesn't know our family and just his prompting on you to be praying for her in this season. She's early 20s. I mean, not much older than Justice. And it just was the most, oh my gosh. I was like, well, I will love you forever.
Oh.
I will love you forever, purely because, and praise God just for when people are praying for your family and praying. And she's 14 years younger than me. We're, you know, my only sibling. And very much like, you know, probably too much of a second mom, she would say.
Yeah.
But, oh my gosh, it just blessed.
Well, it was so sweet, because I got her number and I sat down and I gave her what I felt like the Lord had me praying for her and a word for her. And then she and I got to connect and go to coffee And she goes to the same college as Justice, which is so sweet. But that's how, which is such a sweet story of how kind of we connected. And then we've been in a couple rights. Yeah. And I think that's the first right I was in with you. You know, I didn't know much about you outside of what's, you know, in the media or what I, you know, was listening to in your, in all the work that you've done with Lady A. But it was so beautiful to, when we wrote that song, just that it, to me, the way that we're writing the song, I was like, I think this is her life. Like this is, it was almost like your life story with Jesus.
It was, yeah.
And it opened up this whole, man, this girl is serious about the Lord, mm-hmm. which was so precious because you're so deeply connected to the Lord. And I was like, I want to have her on the show and I want to talk to her about just how you found the Lord, how you grow with the Lord. I know that your mom is Linda Davis.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that because maybe people don't know. Your mom's a singer too, and she's been in the business for quite a long time.
Yeah, she and my dad. So my mom's Linda Davis. That's her maiden name. My dad, his name is Lang Scott. So they both moved. My dad's from South Carolina. My mom's from East Texas in the early 80s to Nashville to pursue music. And so they met each other here. Got married, and then on their 1 year anniversary, were 3 months pregnant with me. They started their family really young. I mean, my mom was 23 when she had me, but she has had a really successful solo career in country music. My dad is a songwriter. He had a big cut on Leanne Rimes' first record.
Oh, wow.
And then, a lot of other just things that he's been Reba McEntire's band. They both were for 7 years. He played acoustic and guitar.
Yeah, she sang with Reba, didn't she?
So they did a duet called Does He Love You, which was, gosh, I think it was released in 1993. Won a Grammy. So I always joke and say that my whole life, you know, from about the age of 8, I would go to put my cream of wheat in the microwave in the mornings and I had a Grammy staring at me because we didn't have a mantle. And so it just sat on the microwave in the house
funny.
I grew up in. But I met Jesus when I was 5. I was homeschooled in kindergarten and first grade, and it was a really sweet Christian curriculum. And the teacher on the VHS tape kind of asked the students in the classroom, do any of you want to know Jesus as your savior? And I remember I was sitting at it was like the plastic Fisher Price desk and with the little plastic chair. And I was in front of the television and I remember calling my mom in from probably doing laundry or in the kitchen. And I was like, Mom, I want to ask Jesus into my heart.
Wow.
So then she came in
at 5.
Yeah. And we just were sitting in our living room of this tiny little house that I grew up in. And, I asked him, we paused the VHS tape. With
goodness.
Mrs. Palmer, I think was her name.
Oh my gosh.
Who I never met in real life because it was just
the videotape homeschool.
And I mean, thank the Lord for her because she offered, you know, she gave the invitation and right there on Denver Drive, we just prayed the prayer together.
Wow. Yeah. And so because I remember when we wrote The Friend That Jesus Is, I was listening to that recently because you kind of talked a little bit about that young encounter with Jesus.
Yes.
You were obviously going to church every Sunday. Your parents knew the Lord, obviously.
Yes, they grew up in the church. My mom, I think, in a Baptist church growing up. And then my dad, my grandparents were Southern Methodist. But very much, like, faith, they knew the Lord from a very early age, too. That was a part of their upbringing. But I think, you know, because my parents traveled a whole lot when I was a kid and like my dad's parents moved from South Carolina to be in Nashville to help take care of me because I was homeschooled those first 2 years of school and then went into an elementary school because I would cry when the school bus would drive by. I was like ready to kind of dig in and have friends and that experience. So my dad's parents just sacrificed their whole life in South Carolina to come up to take care of me when my parents were on tour. And so I feel like, you know, in an only child for 14 years, he was my friend.
Yeah.
I feel like, I mean, when I think back on that story and I just am so overwhelmed with gratitude of just how chosen I felt in that moment by Jesus and how I never, whether it was the people around me, but specifically his presence through those, especially those early years, he was my friend, you know, and I had it was kind of an interesting way to grow up. And I remember feeling lonely, yeah, you know, here and there. And so just his kindness to pluck me out of that at five, you know, it was just, and it's always been real. I mean, my whole life. I mean, I've definitely had seasons of life where my day-to-day rhythms were not nearly as, you know, not as communicative with him, and having, you know, struggles in my prayer life and not digging into the word. And like, there's definitely been those seasons, but I have never not felt him with me.
Yeah, you carry this real tender thing toward the Lord.
Thank you.
Which, when you describe that kind of five-year-old encounter, it's almost like it's never left. It's one thing that I so appreciate about you, because when I mention God's name or we start talking about the Lord, you could just tell your whole heart lights up, and it's very an emotional thing for you. The Lord is that because his presence has just always been so near to you? Is that the biggest part of the Lord you felt like you've just always had, is like his nearness, the nearness of God?
Yes. And I think in a lot of ways that I couldn't even verbalize when I was younger. I mean, I think, you know, I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that I was an only child for my entire, up until I was a teenager. So, you know, even just playing in my room, like, I don't know, as we're talking, I'm just thinking about all these different kind of moments throughout my childhood and just imagining him there, because he was that. Just, I think there was a balm of just feeling nurtured, feeling like I wasn't alone.
Yeah.
That I think is what pulls up the emotion in me that could make me cry now, is like, we've never been alone. And I think when we wrote that song, I mean, that's the opening line of the song. It's like in the first couple lines, it's like, you know, never been alone, never been alone when I think about him.
Yeah.
Met me as a child, I was only five.
Yeah.
I mean, and he took my hand, and it's like that, oh my gosh, like, where would I be? And I think, you know, even moving into where I am now in my life and the career, the trajectory it's taken, I mean, there have been very, very lonely seasons for me, you know, of just whether it's I'm surrounded by people who either I'm working alongside or who are a part of our team. So, you know, you can connect and you can have friendship, but there's this kind of interesting balance you have to find. And like, friendships over the years, because of traveling as much as I have, like the natural separation and distance that can happen. And so I remember when we wrote that day, I was just kind of having some big feelings just around like, man, I am so grateful for my close-knit group of friends, and also holding space to kind of grieve the friendships that have changed over the course of my life, but that Jesus has always been there. Yeah.
I think too, I've never told you this, but what affected me so much about that is because, you know, Justice, my son, is an only child. And when he was three, he started having these conversations with this person named Jawa, and Jawa had this friend named Gussie. And later on, I would listen to his conversations, and he would tell me these big things, like how Jawa put wings on bees, and I knew it was the Lord.
Yes,
he can't remember these moments. But when you would talk about that, I was like, I wonder if she had moments like that where in her little years, she probably can't remember, but they're created out of loneliness.
Yes.
And sometimes God, just in his compassion and his love for us, like, it's always meant the world to me that you had this kind of deep, deep friendship with God at such a young age. And it's a little kind of like crazy that your life took the turn that it did, but he's been there
the whole time.
And it wouldn't have been like what anybody would have been like, well, somebody that's that close to God would probably, their life would look like this, or they would get involved in this kind of music. And yet you kind of ended up going the country path. Do you feel like it's because of your parents?
I think probably so. I mean, I was exposed to country music and really all genres when I was a kid. I mean, I remember, you know, some of my biggest influences are Bonnie Raitt. And
yeah.
I remember learning to sing harmony to the Commodores' greatest hits, driving, you know, to beach vacations in the summer, and the Doobie Brothers. And I mean, there were so many. Carole King, Tapestry is another one. Yeah. And then all the country stuff, you know, Reba, Trisha Yearwood. I mean, all and even more traditional too. But so I really enjoyed it. And then when I started writing, because I started writing when I was 16. And so much of this is because my parents exposed me and then gave me the opportunity to step on stage. Because when I was a junior in high school, my mom got the opportunity to do a Christmas show out at Opryland Hotel at the Gaylord Opryland yeah. Resort. And so for the next 3 years, our family did Christmas shows. So from, you know, a couple days before Thanksgiving through Christmas Eve, we would do like 40 plus shows.
Wow.
And it was all Christmas. And so that's when I really started learning. I'm like, okay.
And you loved it.
Oh, I did. Okay. I mean, it was a big commitment and it was every day. And I knew, I was like, if I can do Christmas songs in this way, I can definitely get up on stage and sing songs that I wrote, you know?
Yeah.
And that really kind of, that's where I learned so much of what it felt like to be on stage. And then I started writing in town, and a producer actually was messaging her this morning. Her name is Victoria Shaw. She's a songwriter and a producer. She came to the Christmas show, saw me, and said—
As a teenager
at 16. And she goes, I want you to live out the last 2 years of high school, but let's just write when you have time. And so we started writing. And I remember I like didn't go to Florida for my senior year spring break with my friends. I stayed in Nashville and wrote songs. And
have a dream then? I mean, did you feel like this is what I'm going to do?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I mean, I grew up, you know, I started singing in church, like in youth group. And then at school, I went to a private Christian school. And so we would have chapel on Wednesdays. So right around the age of 14, which is when my sister was born, ironically.
Wow. Yeah.
I started just really wanting to sing. And so other than those Christmas shows, I really started singing in front of people, singing worship songs.
Wow.
So, and it's really interesting because it wasn't until we sat together that I think the fullness of that truth really hit me again,
yeah.
where it's like, oh my gosh, I started singing these songs. Like that was the beginning of,
wow.
of it. And so, you know, no wonder when we sit and we write together I've been able to, you know, to write these songs that are worship songs. Like, I'm like, it feels like
natural,
home.
Yeah.
It's home.
Yeah.
And so, it's been such a blessing to be able to go to those places again. And, you know, I made a faith-based record with my family and wrote a little bit for that, but this is different. Those were still very much stories, like story songs with a Christian message.
Yeah.
My heart is really pulling towards worship.
Yeah.
Right. In this yeah. season, which is really, I'm here for it. I'm yeah. so excited because
you're so great at it.
Oh,
hey everybody, this is Rita Springer. I know some of you know that I am doing a mentorship program right now for those of you that feel like you are in the creative realm. Maybe you're worship pastors or songwriters or in any kind of a creative department that you're working in church. Maybe it's just church leadership or you're on staff at a church or just have just this creative kind of sense about you. I love raising up creatives and have just spent the last 16 years pouring into them. Used to do a school called Dive, and now I'm really just doing this one-on-one and mentorships. And so that's available on the ritaspringer.com website. If you go to my website and you click the tab on mentorship, you could sign up for a one-on-one with me that's in a 4-week process. So we do these in groups of 4 weeks where if you sign up, you have four 1 hour sessions a week with me. And it's really been an incredible process for those that have joined. And honestly, it's one of the best things I've ever done. I love getting to know you guys, and I love encouraging those of you in these areas where sometimes you guys feel stuck, you need leadership training, you want to raise up songwriting cultures in your worship team, or just life issues that you just need help figuring out or wanting just encouragement to walk through. If that's you, don't hesitate to get on the website, fill out the application, upload a little video, send me a little video about yourself, and we can just have a great conversation. So if that's you and you're looking for mentorship, go to the RitaSpringer.com website and hit that mentorship tab, and I would love to mentor you. Like, it's been just an honor to be, to just find the melodies in some of these lyrics with you, because you're just so there.
Thank you.
You know, it's not, what I love about you is it's almost like it's a familiar place for you. Mm. It's not like somebody wanting to break into the worship world. You know, it's a familiar place with you. But did you, like, I'm always curious about people like you, and I find it so fascinating that the Lord, you know, will take a life and he'll actually, I think the Lord loves the world. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he loves the lost. I'm just one of those big believers that we are light, a light to a dark world. Mm-hmm. And I do think that God sometimes does some of his most beautiful work entrusting us to the mainstream in a way that, I mean, he's got to trust you with it, you know, and he really has trusted you in this, because you didn't go Christian, you went country, and you go to college, right? You do your Christmas shows,
yes,
and then you did go off to college, because you've got, did you graduate MTSU?
No,
okay.
I did 2.5 years. So I met my bandmates right after the end of my sophomore year. And so then
they were in college with you?
No, they were out. They had moved to Nashville. They're a few years older than me, and they had both graduated from the University of Georgia.
Okay.
And so they had moved to Nashville to write. And so we met because I had a development deal. So while I was in college, I had a development deal on another label in town. And so I was in the process of recording a few songs, getting a showcase together. And so in March of 2006, I showcased for this label and thought, I mean, all signs pointed to it was going to be a yes. Like, I was going to get a record deal. Well, by, you know, 9 a.m. the next morning, they had called and said, well, we've decided to go with someone else. So we're sorry, you know, this is not going to happen. And I just remembered, I mean, it was the first career heartbreak, and I was 20, almost 20. And then I met my bandmates. That was March of 2006. I met my bandmates in May of that same year. And so it was such a wild, and we started writing songs together. It was not, I mean, a lot of people I'm sure wonder, like, were y'all put together by some mastermind?
Yeah, yeah.
It was so unbelievably organic, because I found Charles's music on MySpace and then randomly was in the same place.
I haven't heard MySpace in such a long time.
I know, a lot of people listening probably don't even know what it is. but like, it was such a bizarre, like, meeting. We were both at the same place. I recognized him. I walked up to him and I was like, hey, I love what the songs I've heard on your MySpace page. Like, I'm a singer-songwriter here in town. And then he proceeded to tell me, like, my friend Dave just moved up from Georgia, which Dave was an accountant in Atlanta. And like,
that's hilarious.
Left everything, sold all his furniture, cashed out his 401k, moved to Nashville. They were going to be writers, and they've been a writing team. And so we got together and started writing. And so there was no plan of a band. I mean, it was just, I'm writing with two guys that were really close in age. I loved so much of just like musically where they went. Their influences were similar to mine. It was just a great fit. And so then it just kind of naturally kept evolving into this thing, which is just crazy how, you know, one of those details taken out, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. Wow. And so you guys, when did you like get like realize we're going to make a record. We're not just writers. We're going to actually be a band.
Yeah. So we played our first show in August of 2006 and started doing shows. Like we would go in Charles's Jeep Grand Cherokee at the time and like hop up, and Dave would always call and he would be our agent and pretend to be someone else to try to, like, you know, get us $200 instead of $100. You know, things like that. But but that was a very short lived season, because once we started, we did a steady gig at Third and Lindsley here in Nashville. And then we started getting some record industry people coming out to the shows. And before long, we had a couple deals on the table. And so we signed our deal in the summer. Like the deal was finalized the summer of 2007. So about a year after the band formed. And then our first single came out in September. So everything really happened quickly.
So fast.
Yes. Yeah.
And how old are you at this point?
20. I mean,
Yeah. I mean, yeah. How does a 20-year-old, I mean, how do you process it from, you've got great parents. Mm-hmm. So, and you've got parents who've been in the industry, who have a lot of friends in the industry. So you've got a lot of advice mm-hmm. for what to do and what not to do. But did you feel like you had enough to like bearings around you at 20 to?
Naively, yes, I think so.
Yeah.
But I mean, and I was pretty, I mean, my parents' friendships and connections within the Nashville, you know, music industry community, I was very grateful for them. But I also was that kid that was never, I never wanted it to appear like I was riding their coattails. So it wasn't like, you know, I was 20 years old, so I was an adult, so I'm not going to bring my dad with me to this meeting, you know, like things like that, that I just kind of didn't, I wanted to forge my own path in that way. So I would ask them for advice, and then, but then we were kind of like, it just took off. And then I feel like so much of my relationship with my parents since then was like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad y'all get it. Like y'all know what it feels like to be on the road and to be in a different hotel room every night and to have the, you know, the not so glamorous parts of what touring is and know that they understood, because that would have been hard to come home and try to explain what was happening and then be like, I just go to a cubicle every day, or, you know, I go and teach in a classroom. Right. Like they got it, which I'm so grateful for. But I think, you know, I definitely went in knowing that I wanted to enjoy who I was experiencing it with. That's one thing that I think my parents have been such great models for, is surrounding themselves with people that they love and collaborating, working alongside just really solid people. And I knew that whether I was able to verbalize it at the time, that that was something that I wanted to adopt into my story too, because it's so much of it is who you're doing life with.
Well, yeah, you're like a on the road family in a sense. Well, you talked about being lonely growing up. The road's super lonely. So you're on the road with these two guys and you're the only girl. How did you keep your heart tender for the Lord? Because, I mean, you guys blew up. And you guys are very well known for what you've done over the years. What did you tell me? Almost 17?
Yeah, 17 years this year,
It's crazy to have that kind of a run. And still just as popular now as, you know, as you've always been. How did you handle the loneliness of the road being the only girl for so long with these two guys? Are great guys. Yes. And you guys have a great friendship and you were like a family, but how did you process all that?
I mean, I still think I am to a degree. Yeah. I mean, everything was moving so fast. I mean, I think being born and raised in Nashville helped.
Yeah.
Because when I would come home, the friends that I had grown up with, even if I didn't get to see them and we just checked in on the phone, there was a grounded, a rooted feeling that I had, because I wasn't living in a town I didn't know. You know, this was my home. So the few days off a year we had, I was home. You know, it was a town that people knew me and I could, you know, call and talk to friends. But it was lonely. I mean, it was very lonely. And you know, we're all in our early 20s and none of us were married when the band started. Yeah. And so you've got a whole lot of like navigating what that is out on the road with, you know, and it was a hard, there were some definite hard moments and a lot of laughs too.
Yeah.
I joke and say there was one thing that in high school, I was a football manager for all 4 years. And I joke, but it's true. I mean, that really prepared me for being around men a lot, you know, So I was, you know, I would make sure.
The only child girl in a family until, you know, 14 years later. And then you're with these two boys.
Yes. Yes. I know. It's crazy. And, but I mean, we were showing up and getting to perform and sing together. And I mean, it was so exciting. So exciting. And I think there's also just things like we're getting to know each other at the same time,
yeah.
You know? So then there's moments too, where you're like, oh wow, I just learned something new about you there, which I'm sure they were feeling the same way about me.
Yeah.
Which has been an interesting part of our journey too, because we met, we started writing, we started a band and we were, you know, quick friends, but then the friendship and then the working relationship and all of that has just kind of evolved over the years. And we're all very different people with different ways of communicating and different stories, you know, from growing up. So it's been a very refining relationship, you know, with the two of them. I think we all joke and say that we each helped prepare each other for marriage.
Wow.
Just because of being with, you know, being with one another in such close proximity for so long and in so many different scenarios. So it was an experience. A lot of fun.
Well, it says
and
a lot
of hard
for
times.
For a band that's been together that long. You must have genuine camaraderie and a deep love for each other that you stay connected and you stay in there. You know, which I think is kind of beautiful. And with you, I just because you're so tenderhearted to the Lord. How did you? Is there a moment in those years in the maybe even the early years of being in the band that you were like, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, or did you always have it as kind of an awareness or an inner peace being like, this is what I was made to do, is sing this. And where did your love for maybe I'll write Christian music? Cause then you segued and did a solo project and kind of did a Christian record. Mm-hmm. So just to kind of explain that little segue and journey.
Yeah, it was, there's a few different things that led to the family record. So I remember, you know, you speak to the loneliness of being on the road. And I remember on the bus just packing, you know, I would pack my suitcase and I had my backpack and I didn't take my Bible every weekend, but I definitely, when I started feeling this momentum with the band, like picking up so much, I'm like, okay, I've got to get back in the Word. I'm not able to be in church every week. Like, you know, there's just, I really want to ground myself in truth. And it was, I mean, I just needed it. I needed it. And my friend Annie F. Downs, so we were in a small group together, and she got me My Utmost for His Highest. She had kind of gifted me this stack of books, and she was like, if you can take them with you, you know, it was something every day to read and just helped me get into that rhythm.
Yeah.
And so I have her to thank for just helping encourage my walk, you know, in just the daily practices of getting in the Word. And so I would do that. And then, you know, leading into the family record, in April of 2015, we were on the way to the ACMs. They were in Dallas. And my bus caught on fire on the side of the road. Like, we had to pull off on the side of the road. It was rush hour traffic outside of Dallas, and everything in the back, all of my red carpet stuff for the ACMs, all of the things that I had packed, burned except my Bible.
What?
And I have a picture of it. I still have it. It's in, you know, it's in a bag, like preserved. That was a huge moment where it was like, and, you know, whoa. I was married at that point to Chris. We were together on the bus. Our oldest daughter, Isley, was not with us, which was a miracle because she toured with us everywhere. And the fire actually started on the tire under the bunk where she would have been sleeping. So there was just this moment of like, Lord, you spared us. You spared us. You spared everyone around us. What are you, you know, I see you. I hear you. What am I to take from this other than thank you for sparing us? And so that was one thing that happened. The main kind of reason for the family record was in honor of my grandfather, my dad's dad, who he passed away from leukemia back in 2011. And so we had just a group of people come around us in that journey that we wanted. My dad approached me with the idea to put a record together for these kind of couple hundred people who had come alongside us and been praying and checking in. It was all through a Caring Bridge site. And so my dad was like, hey, we should do something that we can just send to them as a thank you. And I just looked at my dad. I remember we were at Sunflower Cafe over in Berry Hill. And I was like, if we're going to do this, let's do this so the world has the opportunity to hear it.
Wow.
And so then I went to our team. I went to my label at the time and was like, this is what we want to do. And so they were on board. And we started writing a little bit and then finding other songs and some traditional hymns that we wanted to record. Ricky Skaggs came on board as the producer, which was like, oh my gosh, such a gift. And so then, you know, we're working on the record. That was after the bus fire. So 2011, my grandfather died. 2015, the bus fire. And then in 2000. Later in 2015, my husband and I get pregnant with our second. It was our second pregnancy. Our daughter Isley was two, and we miscarry. And I was writing for the record, and went into the room with Emily Wiseband and Bernie Herms, and I was truly still in process of miscarrying. And I just said, "Well, okay, I don't know what y'all are coming in with today to maybe want to throw out, but this is what's happening in my life." And so then we wrote Thy Will.
Yeah.
And so then that became the lead single off of that project.
And won you a Grammy. Yeah.
And such a, you know, that song, just the stories that we continue to hear to this day of where, how that song and God uses that song to meet them where they are. It's such redemption to the, you know, as much as I still grieve our loss and can't wait until heaven to meet this precious baby that I fully believe is there. There has been real beauty that's come from it. And so those were kind of all the different life events that led to Love Remains, the album. And then I think it, in a lot of ways, it was just God calling me back to the songs and singing about the one that I was created to sing about. I mean, I think about, you know, He created us to worship Him.
Yeah. You know, this podcast is called Worship Is My Weapon, and I just believe that. I believe that worship is such a weapon against stuff. Would you, like, when you think about that, do you feel like here the Lord allows you to do all these things? It's so beautiful that all of a sudden this moment where you're processing loss.
Yes.
And in the process of making the record to help people in loss, you lose a baby.
Yeah.
And then you write a song that brings other people to a place of healing. I mean, it's just, you can't get better with the Lord than that. Mm-hmm. And it feels like that's where the Lord was turning you back to, like, let's do this. Let's write songs like this. Let's do this. Even though you've continued to just, I mean, that was 2015, right?
The record, yeah. So wrote Thy Will in 2015, and the album, the full album came out in 16.
Yeah. And you've still, I mean, you guys have been going strong, but there is such a pull for you on this other side, which is so evident that you were made for that. You were obviously made for both sides, but I can't wait. Whenever I think about you, I'm like, I can't wait till that girl does another full project, because I think you're in a even a broader place now with your understanding of the Lord and your wisdom and your depth of the Lord, that there's not where the questions would be maybe years before. Yes. Those questions aren't there anymore. That's there's right. almost this certainty that's on you.
Oh, and I feel like, and I have my husband to honor and to thank for this. I mean, the way he wakes up every day and his posture towards the Lord is, I mean, I would not be who I am today if not for his modeling of that for me in our home every single day and for our daughters. And I mean, he says it all the time. He goes, I want our girls to learn how to play an instrument so they can worship.
Wow.
He's like, not because.
So they could be country stars. Yeah.
It's because if I did not have the ability to pick up a guitar or to sit at the piano and through tears worship him in the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, I don't know where I would be.
Wow.
And so that is his heart as their father, and wanting to, you know, and they all show gifting, musical gifting, but it's like, but the why is because of just what the intimacy that brings you into with the Lord. And so, he's taught me that too.
That's amazing.
You know, just being able, and he's modeled it in such a powerful way to where I find, you know, over the years going to those places to worship when I normally would have like coped in a different way, you know? Yeah. And so just the help of my husband in that way has been so, so powerful.
Man, it really is. Hillary, your life, the protection even that the Lord has had in your life, and how you could have turned out a little screwed up.
And in some ways, I'm sure I am. But
the amount of success sometimes just kind of, you know, can, you know, warp people out a bit. But the beauty of how God is just, the consistency of how God has put, I mean, you've known your husband since college,
yes,
right?
Yes.
But the fact that he's always put the right people around you to almost just keep you in this place of holding,
safety.
You know, safety and holding is,
yeah.
It's quite stunning because you could be obnoxious.
And I want you to tell me if I ever am.
Diva in the world, but you're the most real, kind person. And it's so evident that that's the Lord on you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's
thank
so beautiful to
you,
see
Rita.
That.
Gosh,
it really
you.
Is so beautiful. You're a mom to three girls now because you had twins as well.
Yes.
Are they identical?
They are. Yes.
I think I've seen some early pictures of them. I haven't seen them recently, but I remember them being curly headed.
Yes.
Identical.
A lot of curly brown hair. And yes, so our oldest is Isley. She was born summer of 2013. And then my twin girls came a little early in January of 2018. So I was due in March and they came at the end of January. So yes, it's Isley, Emery, and Betsy. And so
Betsy, Isley's, what a great name, Betsy.
When I was a little girl, I told her this story recently. I said, you know, when I was a little girl, I had a dream. Like, not a literal dream, but I remember sitting and daydreaming about wanting a little girl with brown curly hair, and I was going to name her Betsy.
Oh, my goodness.
And what's so sweet is that it's a family name on my husband's side. And so I, you know, was like, oh, I love this name. I've always wanted to name, not knowing, because my oldest has kind of sandy blonde, kind of light brown hair.
Yeah.
But their hair is dark brown, and it was so curly when they were little. It's so thick now. It's all straightened, but I mean, I got my little brown-headed curly-haired Betsy. I know. And her middle name is Mac, which is after my grandfather. And just a sweet little God wink is like, he was left-handed and she's left-handed.
Wow.
Just things like that, that, you know, are just, God is so kind in some of the most specific ways that you would never expect. And I just, every time I look at her, I'm like, this is a promise. And this was a hope I had as a child for you, for little Betsy, and also a piece of my grandfather every day.
That now, do you see in any one of your girls a singer?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Isley, my oldest, she's in piano right now. She's learning guitar. And it's, we don't have to force her to practice. Like, she's hitting that point where it's like she wants to sit down.
Yeah.
And we actually wrote a Christmas song this past Christmas together. And yeah,
those
she's
are
a
the
writer.
Best.
She's a writer. And the other two, you know, they're just now, because they're six. Like, I feel like, you know, Emery, my middle, so she's technically the middle, the oldest twin, she has melodies in her head. So she'll be like, Mom, can you get your phone? I need you to record this melody.
That's the best.
Which I've never done. I've never spoken that phrase in front of her. So it is, you know, I talk about my work and singing and all of that. But I mean, that was so something that she's like, no, I just need you to record this because I want to remember it. I mean, we've been in restaurants and she's like, can we go around the corner? I have a melody. I want to sing. And so,
oh, those memos are priceless.
Oh my gosh.
Like, I still find them. Yes. I still find his 6-year-old raps.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Oh, don't ever delete them.
They're the best.
Yes. Yeah. And Emery, I've talked to you about her a little bit, but she's such a unique, she's just so unique and special. And I can't wait to see what God's plan is for her. I mean, just recently, we've talked about this, like, I think just a prophetic gifting, like that we're really just praying into and want to help nurture. But she looked at me back in February, because this year looks a little bit different for us work-wise, like fewer shows, but new music with Lady A, but home more. With them, and my husband has got a couple things that he's, like, couple businesses he's working with and building, and he's a little bit busier. So we were at breakfast, and Emery looks at me, and she says, Dad's working a lot more, and you're looking after us a lot. And I said, you're right. I'm like, you know, your dad and I, that's what this year is about. Like, we're having so much fun, like, being at home together. And I go, are you having fun? And she goes, yeah. She goes, you were made to take care of us.
Oof.
And I was like, you are exactly right, Emery. I said, I was, and I enjoy it. This is so much fun. And on one hand, it's like been very busy the bulk of their life. So on one hand, it's like, that's so hard to hear. Even though there's been a beautiful village around us.
Mm.
But on the other hand, the way that I felt when she said it was like she was calling forth something out of me. Reminding me. It was like God was saying, this is who you are.
Yeah.
This is a part of who you are, you know? And so all that to say, it was just this sweet moment that I will never forget. And later that evening, I was like, Emery, I said, I really believe one of the many, many gifts God has given you, one of them is that you say things to Mommy that she really needs to hear. Like, he's given you that gift. And she goes, I believe you.
Mm.
Like, straight in my eyes. She was like, God made us to believe.
Wow.
Whoa. And I was just like, Lord, who is this?
Yeah.
Who is this precious? She's mine. I know. You gave her to, you know, you gave her to us to raise. But something, like, she's just, she's got some depth in there that I just am so excited to get to witness and to be here for and hold the space for. And so all that to say, I am so, so grateful to be on the journey of motherhood and get to have these sweet girls.
The power of it too. I talk primarily to a lot of, you know, women worship leaders and women artists and women writers, and a lot of them don't get the credibility that sometimes a man would get, but a lot of them are in these you know, positions of they want to be the mom, but they've got to work, and there's just this struggle, I think, sometimes on us as women, that while we would love to spend 24/7 with our kids, it's really beautiful when God gives us the grace, yes, and gives our kids the grace,
yes,
to know that that is our role, but that we have other roles too. And I've watched that struggle that some of my friends kind of go through, where they feel like they're not being good moms because they can't be full-time moms because their lives are, you know, all over the place. And I'm always like, you know what? My kid was on the road with me for so long, and he always had grace on me.
Yes.
And he always spoke, you know, sometimes the thing I needed to hear when I needed to hear it. And I think that I feel like that's so encouraging to other moms who aren't, you know, their role isn't 24/7 being the mom because of their thing, but that is their role.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yes. I love that she was like,
yes,
this is your role.
Yes.
You know, even if sometimes it can't be your role, this is your role. And yes, that is your identity too. And the grace to not be so hard on ourselves, yes, as women and as moms.
Well, it's so much easier for me to look at another new mom who's pursuing music or who has a career in music,
yeah,
and say, you know, I said this recently to someone. I looked at her and I said, God knew that this would be where you are.
Yeah.
That this would be your child brought into this. He knew. He saw it all. I can say that to someone else, but actually letting that be what is true for me,
yeah,
is harder.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if that's just feeling, you know, being really hard on myself, or, you know, knowing so much of what my story was as a child and wanting to, you know, to rewrite some things, or I don't know why we can so much more easily extend the grace and see it clearly for others and have, yeah, a hard time seeing it for ourselves.
Yeah.
But I feel like Emery, as you were speaking about Justice doing that for you, I feel like part of her, where she is right now, is to help me see that.
Yeah.
And absolutely, to be at peace with it,
yeah,
you know?
And I just think that that's a powerful point, mm-hmm, because I do feel like women and moms everywhere just put this massive pressure on, yes, themselves and feel the effects of failure when we're not in the role the way we think, you know, we're supposed to be in the role, but we can't. And there's just, especially single moms, like, yes, I'm in the single mom club. And I've got single mom friends, you know, out of really difficult divorces, and mm-hmm, it's their burden to have to get up and go to work every day and leave their kid with the sitter. Or it's like, yes, I get it. I understand it, but the mercy of the Lord meets you in the toughest of circumstances. Right. And he does give our kids the grace in the middle,
yes,
to understand, oh, the season's changing, you know, and this is how it's got to change. And God just gives us the grace to do it.
Yes, yes.
You know, because it is, it's hard to constantly be on tour or constantly be on the road. And, yes, you know, I mean, I'm in my late 50s now, I can say that, but I don't have a desire to be on the road anymore. Mm-hmm. I would love to buy a house in Florida and kind of sometimes retire, but I do feel like as my role as a mother, Justice is just first year in college, and I still put this pressure on myself and this demand on myself that I'm not enough if he doesn't succeed this way or he, mm-hmm, doesn't feel this way. And I always have to have the Lord be like, hey, look, what you can't be there for, I'm there for.
That's right.
And I love that. I love, mm-hmm, that God just seemed to take care of you and your family.
Thank
do you feel like there's any more kids in you?
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't feel like the door.
Adoption's always a great option.
And I know who to call because I've always been very open to adoption. And one of the other things, not to backtrack, but when you asked about pivotal things that led me, you know, back to singing about my faith,
yeah,
one thing was walking with some really close friends of mine who have a nonprofit ministry in,
yeah,
Haiti. And they, adopted two daughters and have since adopted a son from Haiti. And so they have six children, three biological wow. and three from Haiti. And but I went to Haiti for the first time in March of 2011, and I was never the same. And mm-hmm. I would be, you know, remiss to not speak to that as a part of
yeah.
the journey that God brought me yeah. on to really shift focus, because I'll never forget. It's a pretty crazy story. Like, I went to Haiti for the first time. I had to fly straight from Miami to Las Vegas for the ACM Awards. So I go from literally the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, serving, seeing what this organization is about, experiencing it all for the first time. Yeah. I've never been on any type of trip like that. Straight into Vegas, where I'm, you know, walk into my hotel Yikes. Room and it's like a bottle of water is $8, you know, and probably more now. And I just remember thinking, like, how is this the same planet?
Mm.
How I cannot reconcile this. And just then having to go, okay, now work hats back on. How do I do my job? Yeah. But I can't unsee something. Now, Lord, what is my calling in this?
So and good. So
all that to say, I mean, I've been there six times over the course of wow. like since May, since that year, since that March, and have not traveled there in a while now with yeah. where things are at. But the point being, once you see parts of the world up close that you knew existed, but you had never experienced like that, I feel like you come back into your reality different.
Yeah.
And I hope you do, you yeah. know, and then have a fire lit under you to do something. And yeah. so I feel like I've been an advocate since I was a kid, like in different ways. But after that experience, I was like, okay, I have a whole different depth of purpose to my time here. And so I just felt I wanted to share that just because
it's a big part of your heart.
It is. And yeah. I just encourage anyone to really dig in and experience, you know, it doesn't have to look exactly like what my experience yeah. looked, but gosh,
what is this organization yeah, called?
It's called My Life Speaks. And wow. so they've been running for over 12 years.
Yeah.
And it's just there. So the Wilson family, their middle son was born at 23 weeks and 5 days and was born with severe special needs. And his name is Lane. And so they have been this family that, you know, all of the heart of My Life Speaks in Haiti was to go down there and help just bring life and to speak up for the lives of those with disabilities
yeah.
in those communities, and specifically this one village, to really give them everything that they need. And the beauty of it is by going in and speaking up for those that could not speak for themselves, wow. a lot of them wow. nonverbal and needing therapies and all of the things, the whole entire village has been transformed.
Wow.
You know, and so there's just, it's been, just such redemption. And with the where things are at now in the country, I mean, I was at an event for it last night. Things are so scary, so tumultuous, so dangerous. Mm-hmm. But things in this village, like God is protecting them and providing for them in ways that are just truly like loaves and fishes miracles.
Yeah, yeah.
And we just, you know, last night the big takeaway was we will continue to have hope for Haiti because
wow.
And now more than ever do they need our help, you know.
We'll provide, I'll make sure that there's a link there because people can then donate to the link. Oh, that's great. That's beautiful.
I'd love to share it.
Your future.
Mm-hmm.
You want to do more with this group?
I have so many dreams. But I think to really kind of distill it down, I just want to use the gifts that I have been given to point others on any corner of the planet to the one who loves them, to who created them, to for them to receive and fully grasp how deeply loved they are by who created them. And so in however way I can do that, I want to do it. Whether it's like, you know, on a local level, on a national level, on a global level, through music, through a nonprofit, like that is just my, because I think it all kind of gets back to like, sorry, how our conversation started, which is like, Jesus is, was that for me at five in my room. And he is that for every one of us.
Yeah.
And so for what I wake up every day and do and think about and pray about and move toward, I want others to see that, to experience that, to receive that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's beautiful.
Thank you.
You're going to do it, Hill.
Oh, thank you.